If you've been to Japan recently, there's a good chance you've seen this woman's face plastered on a TV screen in a store window, or a passenger's smartphone on a crowded train. If you did, it's not because she's an idol or a rising star. It's because she's at the center of one of Japan's most polarizing incidents in years, one that made headlines as recently as March 2025, and one that's bound to leave a lasting scar on the internet, as the whole thing was broadcast live to thousands. Airi Sato was a 22-year-old streamer with a sizable online following. Known by her online moniker, Ai Mogami, a name which she had taken from a popular voiceover actress, Airi had built a dedicated community on Who Watch TV. Fans tuned in not to watch her play games or talk passionately about a hobby, but rather just to hear her chat and perform challenges. You see, Airi's main draw was her charm. She knew how to win people over, how to gain their loyalty. She had a Platinum Plus badge on her profile to prove it, which marked her out as one of the platform's top live streamers. Considering that she had grown up in a children's home, estranged from her family, had been living alone since 15, and had only received a basic education, the young Airi had done well for herself. Offline, Airi had another job in Yamagata City. A lot of English sources say that this was at a restaurant, but in reality, she worked as a hostess in a kyabakura, clubs where men pay exorbitant amounts of money to spend time drinking and chatting with glamorous female employees, who in return pretend that they're interested in them. It's not uncommon for these hostesses, particularly younger ones who are strapped for cash, to engage in what's known as papakatsu, a term which broadly translates into sugar daddy hunting. Since the men who visit kyabakuras tend to be lonely salarymen starved for affection, it's often the case that they form one-sided relationships with their favourite hostesses, and shower them with money and gifts in exchange for cold comfort and plastic companionship. The sad fact, though, is that they can't always afford the expense financially, but also feel like they can't afford not to emotionally. But if Airi was such a successful livestreamer, why did she have to work nights at a kyabakura and partake in papakatsu? Well, although she was one of the more recognisable faces on Who Watch, the platform itself wasn't mainstream, and it's estimated that she was only earning 300 to 400,000 yen per month, approximately $2,000 to $3,000 US. Recent reports state that she was a single mother at the time too, so it could be argued that she was just doing what she needed to in order to support her child. But some people online have found evidence that she was also a big poker enthusiast, so it's plausible that she was blowing through it all gambling. Given that live poker rooms are illegal in Japan, she'd have also needed to spend large sums of money to visit overseas casinos. There isn't a lot of information about this case in English, but I've read Japanese reports that Airi was also a hosugurui, a host fanatic. That she would save lots of the money she earned working as a hostess, only to, ironically, spend it all at male host clubs on her nights off, sometimes burning through hundreds of thousands of yen per visit on bottles of champagne. Whatever the case, it's clear the donations she was earning from her streams weren't sufficient to fuel the lifestyle she wanted, and so she supplemented her income by befriending her clients. Clients like Kenichi Takano. Kenichi first met Airi back in 2021, when she was 18 and he was 39. Considering that he had no real career and no family of his own, the self-professed hikikomori had long struggled with his sense of self-worth, and as such, the attention that Airi showed him at the hostess club was enough to make him smitten. Kenichi would regularly journey all the way from Oyama to meet his favourite hostess. Much like how Airi's most dedicated fans had built a parasocial relationship with her online, Kenichi had effectively done the same, only in the real world. Yet despite his genuinely strong feelings, Airi saw him as nothing more than a piggy bank, and she had him wrapped around her finger. During their text conversations, she'd drop hints such as, "I can't afford my rent this month, my phone bill, my medical expenses, I've been vomiting blood recently, could I borrow some money?" They were all lies, of course, each more elaborate than the next, but Kenichi always gave in. When he started to question how she was spending the 100,000 yen he was sending her each month, she'd of course make excuses, and if he ever wavered about sending her more, she had threatened to end her own existence. Over the course of 2 years, Kenichi lent Airi more than 2.5 million yen, or approximately $17,000. But Kenichi wasn't rich. Like many Japanese people, he was simply lonely. And so, to keep bankrolling Airi, he took out loans from several lending companies. Airi was well aware of the slippery slope Kenichi was going down to support her, and yet repeatedly pressured him to take out more and more loans, going so far as to help him research how to fake the paperwork, telling Kenichi how much he loved him. However, although Kenichi believed he was simply lending Airi the funds, she had absolutely no intention of paying him back, and considered the payments to be gifts. That's despite her promising to reimburse him in their text conversations. And when the day finally came that Kenichi messaged Airi, saying that he needed the money back, she again made excuses. And when he became more persistent, she responded in the simplest way possible, by ghosting him. Realizing that he'd been swindled, and unable to get a response, Kenichi sued Airi for repayment. The young streamer didn't show up to their court date, and so, by default, the judge ruled in Kenichi's favor. In December 2023, Airi was ordered to pay back all of the money that Kenichi had lent her, along with 3% interest for every year that the amount went unpaid. But it quickly became obvious that nobody, not even the court, was going to force Airi to pay up. All the while, Kenichi, who was aware of Airi's livestreams, watched as she went online and joked with her supporters about the lawsuit. Through watching the streams, Kenichi also learned that Airi had a wealthy fiancé whom she lived with in a high-rise apartment in downtown Tokyo. Meanwhile, he was drowning in debt, with creditors literally knocking on his door. He reached out to friends for help, messaging one of them.
"Why do I have to go through this? It's my fault for falling in love and being deceived."
On March 7th, 2025, Kenichi sent Airi one final text message, asking her to at least pay him back 10,000 yen. But his message went unread. He'd been blocked. And so, fueled by both embarrassment and rage, Kenichi decided to get his revenge. On March 11th, Kenichi tuned into one of Airi's livestreams, and saw that she was outside, walking the length of the Yamanote Line alone, as part of a scheduled event. He caught a train from Oyama, and, keeping an eye on her movements, tracked her down to the quiet neighborhood of Takada no Baba. At just before 10 a.m, while Airi streamed live to about 6,500 people, Kenichi struck. Viewers watched as Airi looked off camera and became visibly concerned. The live feed continued as Kenichi stabbed her more than 30 times in the face, neck, and stomach with a survival knife. The camera fell to the ground, and the screen went black. For almost 60 seconds, Airi cried for help while being kicked and pierced. And then, she fell silent. But what many thought was a setup was soon confirmed to be a chilling reality when Kenichi picked up her phone and stared at her viewers, his expression completely blank. As one of his friends would later put it, it was like the light in his eyes had gone out. He continued to aim the smartphone at his face as he coldly asked Airi, "Are you still alive?" The following shot of her bloody body confirmed that she wasn't. Officers arrived 5 minutes after the incident. At first, Kenichi seemed calm, like a good Samaritan standing over Airi, trying to help. But when they approached the 42-year-old, he calmly admitted to taking her life, citing their financial dispute as the motive, and later stating, "I thought that if I caused an incident, the world would know what Miss Sato had done to me." He's currently being evaluated to determine whether he's mentally fit to be held criminally responsible, as his lawyers are claiming he suffers from schizophrenia. As a side note, when news of this laying broke, most assumed that it was the famous voice actress Ai Megami who had been targeted, and her socials were flooded with condolences and RIPs. Both she and her agency were forced to assure her fans that she was indeed still alive. As previously mentioned, this incident has caused a massive stir on Japanese social media. From what I've seen, the majority of internet users sympathize with Kenichi. They argue that Airi manipulated and exploited a vulnerable man, and that her actions were bound to have consequences. Kenichi didn't resort to violence immediately. He went through the courts. He asked for help. He reached out to her repeatedly. but the legal judgment in his favor was never enforced. And while Airi continued living comfortably and making light of the situation on her streams, Kenichi was drowning in debt and desperation. Those who side with him have expressed their anger both in the online world and offline, stomping on the memorial flowers that have been laid at the scene in Airi's memory. But understanding someone's pain shouldn't be the same thing as condoning their actions. Kenichi Takano was a 42-year-old man. He made conscious choices. To pursue a relationship with someone half his age, at a place infamous for plastic love. To lend her money he didn't have. To keep doing it, even when the red flags were clear. Airi wasn't innocent in all of this, that much is clear. But civil society is built on the idea that even when we're wronged, there are limits to how we can respond. Murder is not justice. It's irreversible, brutal, and wrong. Airi Sato lied, used people, and took advantage of a broken system. She should have faced consequences, maybe even served jail time. But she didn't deserve to be butchered in the street, with her final moments preserved online forever. The legal system failed to hold her accountable, but Kenichi failed in a far more catastrophic way. He let his rage take over, and in doing so, he deprived her child of a mother, destroyed Airi's life, and ruined his own in the process. One thing I've learned while making these videos is that flexibility is everything. Some days I'm working early, others I'm catching up late at night. And honestly, being able to handle things on my own time makes all the difference. That's why I love using today's sponsor, Stamps.com, the online post office that lets me get all of my mailing and shipping done without wasting time in traffic or standing in line. With Stamps.com, you can handle everything, whether it's sending out certified mail, invoices, checks, or packages, right from wherever you do business. All you need is a computer and a printer. They even send you a free digital scale to get you started, and that's because with Stamps, convenience is the name of the game. Through their mobile app, you can easily schedule package pickups, and if you sell online, Stamps seamlessly connects with every major marketplace and shopping cart. But my favorite thing about Stamps has to be the huge savings you can make. Their rate advisor calculates the best shipping rates in seconds, and helps you find deals you won't get anywhere else, like up to 88% off USPS and UPS rates. Put more flexibility back into your workday with Stamps. Sign up at stamps.com/lazymasquerade for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com/lazymasquerade. Given the billions of videos uploaded to YouTube over the years, it's inevitable that some truly disturbing content has slipped through the cracks. Nightmares buried beneath algorithmic noise, seen by barely anyone. In fact, there's a whole subreddit dedicated to the idea, where users share their darkest findings. r/deepintoYouTube. And while browsing through it, I came across this post by user Heart Was Here, who detailed how he had stumbled upon a particularly disturbing upload that had less than 3,000 views. Found this Russian video, evidently from the 90s, depicting two men stumbling upon snow-covered corpses in a truck bed while researching the abandoned settlement of Yultin, Russia. Never heard anything about this before. Titled 424242 and uploaded by a channel named Yultin way back in 2007, the clip had been lying dormant on the site, having gone almost unnoticed for 17 years. In all that time, only amassing 3,000... Oh, wait a minute. That's not right. The video has about 50,000 views now. For a moment, I was confused. Hart's Reddit post hadn't received all that much attention, so how had the view count jumped so much higher? Figuring that some other YouTuber had beaten me to the punch, I did a little searching and found that Umberville had already covered this about 3 months ago. So maybe this video isn't quite hidden horror anymore, but it's still one of YouTube's eeriest and most important time capsules. The video begins with a stark message in Russian.
Tragedy, Yultin. Editor, Alex.
What follows is as silent as it is chilling. A man steps into the bed of a truck, puts on gloves, and lifts what looks like a blanket, revealing the frozen bodies of 3, maybe 4 people. No narration. No music. Just death, cold, and unanswered questions. At the end, another title card appears. This is how Yalton died. So, what happened here? Well, the intro and outro slates clue us into where this clip was filmed. A quick Google search tells us that Yalton was a Soviet mining town in Russia's far northeast, founded in 1937 by Gulag prisoners. It operated for decades, before being officially dissolved in 1995 due to economic unviability. It's no coincidence then that the timestamp on the video clip is dated 1995. Terrifyingly, just 4 months before this footage was filmed, the government shut off all of Yalton's utilities. Their water, their gas, their heating. The town was completely cut off. All its inhabitants were subsequently told to relocate, and were given little in the way of assistance or compensation. However, not everybody was able to escape Yalton before the extremely harsh winter months took hold. Without heating, those who couldn't leave froze. Indeed, reading through the comments under the original video, the channel owner himself states, "These are corpses that were found in the snow and in cold apartments in the village of Yalton, Chukotka. The heating had been turned off since the fall, and there was no electricity either, and these are people who didn't have time to leave there." And the unfortunate reality is that these were probably only a handful of the people that the uploader found. Looking deeper into the channel, it becomes clear that the uploader was stationed in Yalton during its final days, and was documenting the settlement's response to their abandonment. That documentation includes 3 more videos of a town meeting between residents, who had returned after the long winter, and a government official who had been sent to convince them to leave. In the footage, 2 women are heard saying, "We'll leave, but where will we live? We spent our whole lives here. Here I have a flat. There I'll be homeless." The official replies, matter-of-factly, "But that's not my problem to solve. Can't you understand that?" Finally, one last video on the channel opens with the words,
"And this is how Yalton burned."
It shows how the village was incinerated following its liquidation, how the residents who didn't want to leave were forced to. The video may not be buried anymore, but it still feels like a ghost. A fragment of a forgotten place, captured in its final moments before vanishing from the map. And that's what makes this upload, and the others on the channel, so powerful. Not just their imagery, but the fact they still exist at all. The channel now stands as a rare piece of documentation about an event most people have never heard of. This isn't just about a mining town in Russia. It's about how easy it is for people, and their suffering, to disappear when no one's watching. It's about the cold efficiency of systems that shrug at human lives. And it's about the strange, accidental role a site like YouTube can play in keeping those stories alive. Because not all of history can be found in textbooks. Some of it's hidden in forgotten uploads, sitting in digital silence, waiting for someone to press play. The following is a post shared on r/confession, a place where anonymous Reddit users create threads detailing their darkest secrets. I've read through hundreds of these confessional posts over the years, but let me tell you, this one's a real doozy, and it's enough to make you question what's going on in the heads of anyone who you come into contact with. I first heard about it over on The Void's channel. He covers similar content to me, and is really worth checking out. And since so many of you keep asking, I know we sound similar, but no, we're not the same guy. I'll now read through the confession in full, though if you're eating, I recommend pausing the video and coming back once you've finished, because this isn't just gross. It's stomach-churning, and crosses a line between the deeply disturbed and the dangerously unhinged. "My obsession hurts others around me. It's also my fixation, but it goes far deeper than that. I'll try to explain the obsession the best I can, by explaining how it started. Basically, when I was young, I caught pinworms. It was a strange feeling, and the itch was painful. My parents took me to the doctor, and I got medication to cure it. This event is what sparked my obsession. The thought that my body could be their whole world, their lifeline, almost like a planet of sorts. It was so interesting. After that, I began researching pinworms and other parasites, and I found out the human body already hosts parasites, such as Demodex, on their eyelashes, and I wanted to know how many a human body could endure without a chance of serious health issues. This curiosity has plagued my mind for years. I'm now 25, but I am very, very well versed in parasites, as I've been studying them for over 10 years. I also purposefully infect myself with non-lethal parasites, because it's part of this compulsion of mine. Some have worked better than others. Quite a few have given me serious diarrhea and fevers, while others have been much more bearable. I currently have pinworms and tapeworms, various non-pathogenic protozoa and lice. I am incredibly masochistic, so although it's uncomfortable, I do feel pleasure from it. All these parasites mean I need to eat a lot more than the average person, and I still look thin. And to be quite honest, it means I can enjoy so much more food than most people. I also keep multiple cultures of bedbugs and leeches in containers, and allow them to feed on my blood sometimes, although those kinds are not really my passion, as they don't live permanently on the human body, but I think they're interesting nonetheless, and I find them pretty cute. Now it's time for the confession. My obsession and fixation isn't just about infecting myself anymore. I also have the desire to infect others, and I have acted on those desires. Sometimes my parasites just pioneer to new lands on their own. My family have caught pinworms multiple times without my intention, and other times I purposely spread them. I have infected strangers, friends, and even my own family. I know it's bad, but I just can't stop. I think I have parasites in my brain that make me feel like I need to spread them. I know how crazy that sounds, but if you knew the feeling, you'd understand. Maybe it's just a mental illness, or maybe its origin is parasitic in nature. I don't really know. All I know is that it feels good when I do these things. I feel an intense need to spread my children, and when I do, I feel pleasure. I must have spread thousands of my children over the years. I sometimes sprinkle tapeworm eggs into people's drinks when I'm out at clubs. I also caught pubic lice from a random woman I met at the same club, and in return, I'm pretty sure I gave her pinworms, so it was a trade. The woman wasn't even attractive, I just wanted to gift her some pinworms, and instead, I basically won the jackpot. I then spread my lice to at least 4 other women. Sometimes I sprinkle worm eggs onto food in buffets whenever I visit them. Yes, I understand you'd think it's gross and messed up. I am basically betraying my species for my children. It's hard. I do enjoy people, and I have wonderful friends and family. But I also love my parasites, and my desire is just too hard to control. I don't want to hurt anyone when I do these things, but a force beyond my understanding is driving me to do it. I think I could possibly have a parasite in my brain that's yet to be discovered. I'm sorry to all of the people I've caused discomfort to, but it's for a cause beyond human understanding. Although this can all be justified, I still feel guilt. I don't want to hurt anyone. I hope the people I spread my gifts to can be a little more open-minded and not kill my children, but learn to live with them like I have instead. I'm aware of how immoral this seems to most people. I assume you may see me in a negative light after reading this, but remember, I only want what's best for my children. And if you were truly in my shoes, I'm sure you would do the same. As nightmarish as that confession is, what's perhaps more disturbing is how matter-of-factly it's told. This isn't a cartoon villain twisting a moustache. This is someone operating in everyday life, hiding in plain sight. Someone who knows what they're doing is wrong, but's both unable and unwilling to stop. The idea that someone could casually sprinkle parasite eggs into food at buffets or drinks at clubs is terrifying, but not just because of the physical danger, but because of how invisible the threat is. You'd never know. To this day, the identity of the original poster remains unknown. Reddit users have speculated, debated, and tried to piece together clues, but couldn't pinpoint his location. And obviously, no one's ever come forward. Whether this was an authentic admission, or an elaborate work of fiction, there are undoubtedly people who think like this out there. Communities of bug chasers, who partake in so-called gift-giving. In a world where people wear metaphorical masks, this confession is a reminder that the darkest urges don't always stay locked inside. Sometimes they leak out into the real world. A huge thank you to my supporters here on YouTube and over on Patreon, especially my biggest supporters. George Lopez, Holly Lyons, Alana Pons, Asia Mina, Alicia1996V, Azriel Warakai, Adelstein Tristason, Colin Munsma, Connell Lotham, Farewell Tattoos Jack Seffel, Gina Valera, Grace Archie, Hamish, John Stuart Muller, Misty Blue Longi, Peter Lulldredge, TNS Mum, Terry Ford, and Geokai. Thank you guys so much for your continued support. Remember to hit that like button, and I'll see you all again very soon.